Welcome back to Your Next Stop. This is Juliette Hahn. In this episode, I speak with Dr. Rafael Emmerich Salas. He is the owner and founder of Salas Plastic Surgery. They are in South Florida. You can find and follow them all over social media. So the Love Med Spa on Instagram. You can also go to Salas Plastic Surgery Miami. And that is also on Instagram. And then their website is Salas, and that's S-A-L-A-S, plasticsurgerymiami.com. This is a fun episode. So first of all, I met Dr. Salas through the FETIs for FetTech. We were doing one of our clinical studies with them, and I really enjoyed having the conversation with Dr. Salas, how he kind of went into plastic surgery. And I figured, you know what, this is one of those kind of episodes that I love that you can kind of start thinking. So one of the things that we talk about is really fun because I was calling him I was calling him Emmerich, and he's like, well, my first name is actually Raphael. And I was like, well, wait a second. It's not what my context, where does that come from? So he was telling me a really great story about family history. You could see the love that he has for his family, his extended family, and how important family is, and how important family was also in kind of helping him figure out his path. And it's not what you think, because I thought it was kind of like this expectation, and it's actually a beautiful story. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as I did. Welcome back to Your Next Stop. I am Juliette Hahn, and I am here with another special guest. You guys, you know, I love talking about passion and people that have followed a passion, turn it into a business. So I am going to introduce, and it's kind of a funny story, which we will get into, but it's Dr. Rafael Emmerich Salas. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, and the reason why I say it's a funny story is, so I said to Dr. Salas, I was like, it's Emmerich. And he said, well, it's actually Raphael. And I said, okay, well, and everything, I keep seeing Emmerich. So where is this Raphael? So can you explain a little bit what you started explaining to me? And then I kind of shut you down. I was like, no, don't talk about it, because I want to talk about it on the podcast.
Save the good stories for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
So the funny thing is, so in a Hispanic family, they tend to kind of want to name the sons with the same name. So my dad's name is also Raphael, and my grandfather's name is also Raphael. And so in that sense, when I was younger, they, you know, when at family gatherings and stuff, they would say Raphael, and then everybody would turn around. So from when I was very, very little, they're like, you turn around when we say Emmerich. So your name's Emmerich. And so in my mind, it's just kind of like, hey, well, what your parents say is what it is, right? So I just kept that. And all growing up to school, I grew up in Mexico City, actually, born here, but grew up there. And then, so we just tell them, oh, my name is Emmerich. And then when you came to the U.S., they would always say your first name. Like, they didn't ask you what your name was. They would just go with what it's written there officially in school. And I would never turn around, and the teachers would get like mad because like, I'm not paying attention. And they're like, Mr. Salas. And then you turn around and say, yes. And they're like, I'm calling you. I was like, I didn't hear my name. And so it was just kind of a comical thing. But then at the end, so my father is actually, he's now retired, but was a cardiothoracic surgeon, heart surgeon. And he was at a hospital where I ended up doing my plastic surgery specialty. And he had recently, you know, he was like at the tail end of his career there, but we were there kind of at the same time for a brief period when I was in my training. And so you would get the pages like Dr. Salas, and then they would page me for cardiac stuff. I'm like, oh, you got the wrong one. Like, that's not, you know, I'm the plastics guy. I'm the plastic Salas. And so, but it was like, but it says Rafael Salas. I'm like, yes, that's correct too. But, you know, so it's just a funny, now funny confusion, but yeah, that kind of stuck with me.
No, but I love the name thing, because we do talk about that. Sometimes names are more important than people put on them. You know, it is, you know, parents, when they have their kids, they do put thought into it. I mean, yours is a tradition, right? I mean, my children, Montgomery, Truman, and Penelope, you know, people are like, oh, are those family names? I'm like, no, but we have stories between how we came up with each of the names. And it was really important to us. We loved naming. I mean, I wanted to have more kids because I was like, oh, I just love this naming thing.
you're like, I love the kids.
Literally the second we got pregnant, it was like, okay, let's start talking about the name, because I think names are so important. I grew up, obviously, my name Juliet, there was no Juliet. So I loved having this unique name where there was no other. Like, it became a little bit more popular, but it's still not a super popular name. And so I think the name, I love hearing about why, because I mean, it was funny because you're like, well, no, it's Raphael. And I was like, well, wait a second. I know I looked this up and where did I get Emmerich? Right. And then it says it there. Right. Yeah. But it is important. And I love the ending of that. It's like when you're in the hospital and you and your father are there together and it's like, you're getting paged for the opposite. It's like, you know what, let me just lessen the confusion. And Emmerich is your middle name, as you shared with me.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's Austrian. So that's, again, my story is all over the place. Like, it's kind of, my wife says let's make like a little mini series out of it, because it's just, there's so many weird tangent stories. So Emmerich's Austrian. My mom's grandparents were Austrian. So I'm Mexican American via Spain and Austria. So it's like all over the place. But so everybody's like, I thought your parents were Mexican. Why would they name you Emmerich? I was like, well, it's Austrian. And it kind of comes to the, you know, as I start, forget it. Just don't worry about it. It's cool.
Right.
And then funny story for you, which you don't know this, I don't think, but you've met my daughters.
Yes.
And my youngest daughter, Michaela, her middle name is Juliet. And that's because of my mom's middle name is Juliet. So.
Oh, and I didn't know that. And is it spelled the same way as mine is?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, because there's like the Hollywood way, which is J-U-L-I-E-T-T-E. So whenever people would say it, they would always put my name on that. But it was, you know, one of those things as having a unique name, I loved it. But then, you know, there was a period of time, and it was really, it's going to date me, but when I was younger, there was always that there was the, where you had your name on the bracelets, or they had, you know, stickers or whatever. Yeah. And mine was never on the little thing that you twirled around in the convenience store.
Neither was mine.
I was going to say, neither was yours. Exactly. Right. No, I love that. So you are, I mean, the founder of Salus Plastic Surgery. You are in Fort Lauderdale now. I know you were, you know, and we can get into the whole story. You're South Florida, but I would love to get into a little bit of your childhood. You said you grew up in Mexico City. Was your father was in the medical world. I'm a cardiologist. So was it one of those things that was like, okay, you're going to be a doctor. Like this is what you're going to do. Or was there a choice? I would love to know a little bit about your family history and kind of how that all came about.
Okay. So I'll give you like the brief run through so that your listeners are like, all right, dude, enough of your story. But, so I was born in Missouri, actually. So Springfield, Missouri, which is like, I think every state in America has a Springfield, but right. I was born in Springfield, Missouri. I think it's where the Simpsons are from.
I was just going to say that is where the Simpsons are from. but I was gonna go
so
there.
My father had just finished his cardiothoracic training. So he was now an attending, which is like a professor at the university. And so he was there as a professor, and the two places they rotated, there was a hospital in Springfield and a hospital in Columbia. My older sister was born in Columbia. I was born in Springfield. So you can figure out what was going on there with mom and us. But, you know, I guess he had finished his training, so why not, right? It's time to have kids. But at that time, it was like this new field, cardiac surgery, and everything was happening. You know, valves and bypasses. And all this. It was really like an amazing time for the field. And so he wanted to take that to Mexico because – for a long time, and truthfully still kind of like they'd lag behind, and he's right. Like, but this is important. Like we can save like lives. So this is, I think it would be great if I could go there, teach him how to do it because I'm a professor officially here. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and why don't I just go teach him and then they can carry it on and then we're good. And, I mean, it was noble. I was like, I think a year and a half old, and then we moved. My younger sister is actually born in Mexico City, and we lived there for, gosh, almost 10 years. And it was great because my family was all there. So grandparents, uncles, cousins, aunts, everybody. So it's a really nice variation of cultural upbringing, which I think is cool. But then after a while, it's, you know, it's a little bit different down there. It's a little more challenging in terms of getting people to want to piggyback more work to learn more things with essentially not really a bump in pay, but just kind of like the altruistic do better, do good for the world type of thing, which I mean, kudos to my dad. It was a noble endeavor. It's just tough to get people to kind of hop on board with that because there is no true compensation. It's not like, it doesn't work the same as in the US. But I think also that comes from his mom, my grandma, my abuelita. It was like, you know, she's like the nicest human in the world. And everybody was like, you know, very, very religious lady. And, you know, rest in peace. She's no longer with us. But she definitely left a mark on everybody. with him and then him to me. And I think there is a little bit of that that sort of drove me towards medicine. I think more so it was me. This is more like high school now. We're talking about like fast forward to high school.
Yeah.
We would interact. My dad was big on dinner at the table, everybody together at family every night. And so we would have stories about, hey, so how'd it go? How was school? That. And then we'd be like, well, what happened with you, dad? Or he'd show up late or just in time for dinner type of thing. And he's like, well, and then he'd tell you stories. But it was like, it's like as cool as you see like in the TV shows where they're like, stuff's flying and this and that. And I operated for 14 hours overnight and we saved a life, whatever. So it was always like this, like in my mind, I've always been had like this very, I guess we'll say active imagination, which is, I'll segue to that with different with my mom's side. But ultimately, like I played in my head as like, this is awesome. Like this is an exciting life to have, right? Like saving lives, like, in right. You know, and that's, it's one of those things where you just found it incredibly interesting slash fulfilling that I would say like, I would love to do that. I would love to be able to do that every day as like a thing, you know, it's like, this is my job. People, you know, it's like, I mean, mm-hmm. Now it's been kind of a, I guess a phrase, like not all heroes wear capes type of thing, but it really felt like that. Like right. You were just like, save somebody else today. And you're just like, cool.
Yeah.
Like,
so it wasn't that, you know? Right. It wasn't something like it was expected of you, which is cool. So
oh,
yeah,
no, it wasn't. No. And actually it was the opposite.
Right. Okay.
It was the opposite. So when I applied to med school, my dad's like, oh, really? I was like, why? Yeah. Why do you want to go to med school? Like I did all this, you know, the mentality is always like, and obviously they're old school, like, you know, they're like, we do all this so you can have a better life than us. Like not so right. You can work just as hard and suffer like I did. And I was like, well, but you know, I really like it. And I think it's interesting and this and the other. And my mom's side is all artists. So my mom's side, the Martinez side, they were like, professional photographers and in the film industry. And I have like painters with like works of art
very
in the
cool.
Royal Museum of Spain. Like everybody's like in the arts. And my dad's side is all the scientists. So his brother was a general surgeon. His other brother was like an engineer. Like, so it's like, I got like, I'm the middle child and I got like the
brains of the bone, which is so fascinating.
But they thought like, this kid's so artistic. Like I was winning like art contests and like way out of my age range. And they're like, who's this? And they're like, that's this kid. And they're like, well, that's not right. I was like,
wow.
And they're like, that kid didn't do that. And then they're like, yeah, yeah, he did. And so it was like, I mean, obviously we're talking about like elementary school, you know, but or
right,
middle
but
school,
still, but, yeah.
But people were still like, kind of like, huh. I mean, like batting above average on the art side, I guess. And so they were always like, he's going to be an architect or a graphic designer or some like artsy style. And
right.
When I said medicine, he was like, oh man. Okay. So then I did medicine anyway. Let's fast forward. I go to my medical school. Now I'm at Tufts in Boston doing this. And then after second year, you have to choose surgery or medicine. And they said, I want to be a surgeon. And my dad's like, nah, don't do that. He's like, you know, it's like, you didn't listen to me for medical school. At least go to like medicine. It's a little bit more chill. Like you don't have all the call, like crazy, like 3 a.m, got to run the surgery type stuff. And at that time, I'm still, you know, still young, like I'm old now. You know, but
yeah,
you still are very romanticized with the idea, and you're like, no, but I want to like get up and do save lives like you did, type of thing, you know. So I did. I went surgery, and because you have to pick, because they really like skew your subsequent classes and courses. So I went surgery. He's like, oh, geez, okay.
But yeah, but you know, what is really cool, and this is why I love doing stories. Like I always say, stories connect us, and you could, I mean, fascinating that you had both sides, the science and the creative, and that you kind of got both. And it was like, okay, let's see where I go. But what you said in the beginning is like, you got the good feels of what your dad was doing. Someone else, right. Like, you know, your dad was like, okay, I'm coming home. And you remember that sitting at that table and listening to him talk. And so, another kid might be like, oh, I know I don't want to do that. Or, you know, another child that their dad didn't make that a priority and they never saw him. Oh, I definitely don't want to go into that because, right, I never saw my dad. He worked all the time. But you got the good right. feels of it. And so, of course, that's going to stay. And that's one of the things that I love doing on this podcast, because sometimes people don't always think about it, is when you have like a good feel when you're a kid, a lot of times if we can really kind of introspectively think back and in different times of our life, especially at times that we question, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I on the right path? Am I doing, and kind of go back and be like, when did I have those good feels? and what was around it. Sometimes that helps people really get unstuck. So I love that you have that vivid imagination of, yeah, it was exciting. And then, you know, bringing your grandmother in it too. So family was really important in kind of shaping where you went. And then you were like, no, I want to do surgery. This is what I want, you know, meant to do. And then you open your own practice, which, you know, is also another thing that we're going to get into. But to me, like being an entrepreneur, there is a very creative kind of part of that. And not everyone in the sciences is like, oh, I want to venture out and do things on my own. Cause that's a whole nother side of people's brains, right? That's a whole nother kind of way people work. And, you know, when you said you had that kind of creative thing, I was like, oh, that's interesting. That, you know, makes me think a lot. So, okay, you're now in medical school. You decide that you're picking surgery. So then take us through that a little bit.
So at that point, he had me rotate with a bunch of people that he's like, I know some doctors, you know, at this point, you still get like a little bit of a break in the summer. He's like, come down, I'll have you hang out with some friends of mine in medicine and like different fields and see if you like what they're doing. And it was just, it really just, I mean, it was great. And obviously to every specialty has their art. But it just didn't really speak to me. And I was like, I don't know, Dad, I think it doesn't really work for me. So went surgery. He's like, oh, geez, okay, fine. So at the end of that, then they're like, well, you know, what specialty are you going to head for? Right. And so, and for me, I was like, oh, of course. And this is actually a true story. If I could get you to meet any of my med school people, first day of medical school, huge auditorium, right, where you meet for most of the classes and you sit there for 8 hours and they just cycle all the professors and you sit there and you learn. And like a proper champion college kid, I sit in like the last row at the top, where it's like nice and dark. I mean, I paid attention, but like, I just wasn't really like the front row guy. Cause we were cool kids back then, you know? But the professor and I thought nothing, we're just hanging out and we're chatting and they're like, hey, welcome, whatever. He was like, who here knows what they're going to be when they finish medical school? And I just stood up. I don't even know why I stood up. Cause normally you just raise your hand. I don't know. Right. I stood up and I just went like that, you know, cause I was like, I guess I figured I'm out the way back if they're going to see me, whatever. And then I realized I'm the only one that stood up.
Wow.
And I was like, so of course I get called on. Yes. What's your name? I was like, hey, my name is, you know, Rafael Emmerich Salas. He's like, what are you going to be? I was like, I'm going to be a cardiothoracic surgeon. And the guy goes, wow, it's a bold statement, but okay. So for everybody else that isn't 100% decided on day one of medical, just have an open mind and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh God. So I sat down, but in the end, I didn't end up doing that because, you know, that was my original drive to get there. And just kind of fast forward to now, like really choosing like what specialty you want to pursue, because you do have to start investing time with the people that are in that field so you can acquire the mm-hmm. skills and the knowledge and really meet the people that are kind of going to make that difference in terms of what you do and if it really is the field for you. And so I was, you know, having this conversation with my dad and he's like, don't do cardiac surgery. Like, you know, it's just a lot. Like he's like, I'm X years old because I'm not going to call him out, but he's like, but I'm still have to get up at 3 a.m. to go do, you know, a consult.
I want to pause you for a second because this is what, and then I want you to finish the story. So is it like Michael Jordan's kid going into basketball? Like is your dad like kind of talking to you like you don't want to always have to be in my shadow, or was it because he was like, this is tough, like, or do you not really know?
I think, well, now, I mean, obviously we've had a lot of conversations since, but I feel like, and he never really says yes or no, but it seems like he just wanted to make sure that that's really what I wanted.
Right. Okay.
Because in retrospect, he's right. I mean, it's a big commitment. You spend a lot of time, you give up a lot of your life for this. Mm-hmm. And again, just, you know, a little quick aside, but like I meet some people and they're like, wow, amazing. You have the best life and all this. And like, man, how cool is that? And I was like, he's like, how lucky are you? And I was like, well, lucky, like how, right? Cause you know, it's like,
you work a
lot. There's no luck on this, but if you want this spot, I'll trade you the entire 10 years of your 20s for this.
Right.
And then maybe it's kind of a, you know, and they're like, oh, I don't know if I do that. And I'm like, see, it's not quite just like, hey, you got lucky. But you had to work. But at the same time, I would say I'm lucky. I'm lucky in the sense that, you know, my parents came together and gave me this skill, you know, say, you know, for them to kind of give me those talents, like I said, kind of mesh together the art and science side of it. I don't know. God sprinkled a little bit of like talent in there, and that's just me being lucky, being born with these skills, right?
Yes. So and finding that something that you love, you know,
right? That's, and exactly. But to speak to that, yeah, if you do love it, then you put in the effort to hone the skills. And my abuelita, my grandma on my dad's side always say, you know, like what your talent is God's gift to you, and what you do with it is your gift back to Him. Mm-hmm. Like, did you waste it? Did you use it? Like, and so I always felt like I have all these things that I can do. Like, if I don't do like the max that I can do with it, I almost feel like I am letting, I don't want to say, you know, somebody down, but yeah. Like, it stuck with me. And that's what I was telling you. Like, my grandma had so much influence on everybody, and in the nicest possible way, but you're just like, ah, geez, I don't know. Like, I guess I really can try harder, I think. So let me just try harder. So it's one of those things that just like in the back of your mind, she's always kind of there.
I love that.
In a good way.
Yeah. No. And so I want to go back, you know, I know I interrupted you there because I was just curious about the kind of the path. So your dad really sat you down and said, I don't think you should go into that. So then how did you kind of get off of that and then decide?
Oh, so it was still him. He said, don't do cardiac. He's like, one more shot. Let me get you in touch with some of my friends. And you know, again, maybe it is luck that like, fortuitously, my father is in medicine and he was able to put me in front of like, you know, I spent time with a urologist, a vascular surgeon, a general surgeon, orthopedics, and then finally plastic surgeon. And that day I was like, this is it. Like in the morning, we ended up doing like a free flap reconstruction for a cancer defect. And then in the afternoon we were doing like injectables, and then he did a breast augmentation, and then we did a facelift. And I was just like, we're like all over the body. There's like all this stuff to do. Like, I'm never going to be bored, because that was one of those weird fears for me that I was like, what if I like sort it out and then that's it? Like,
yeah.
You know, now I got to do this every day of my life forever. And I'm going to be like, you know, and I don't know, it's a weird, I don't know if you call it fear, but like,
no,
sort of concern I had that I was like, what if I get bored of it? But in this field, it really, there is just, it's almost impossible because there's so much to do. Like, there's such variety, top to, you know, head to toe, and then just all the reconstructive elements of it, and all the fields that are within it, in terms of like cancer recon, trauma recon, the cosmetic side of it, craniofacial, burns, hand surgery. Like, there's so much of it. And then the best part, when this doctor, it's Dr. Halpern, he was like, he said, well, you know, you just have to be confident enough in your knowledge to figure it out. Because I was asking him, I was like, well, so how do you know like how to do this? And he said, because plastic surgery isn't a cookbook. There's no, this is how you do this, because you'll never have the same gunshot wound. You'll never have the same patient asking for the exact same thing. You have to know the principles and then be able to apply those rules that you know of how the body and the tissue behaves, and then use those, that input, whether it's the hole, unfortunately, of like the defect that's there that you have to correct, or the patient's opinion and wishes, and you have to go that way and figure it out. And that's where you have to be. There does have to be some sort of artistry in it for you to figure that out. And when he said that, I was like, that's it. Like, this is what I want. This is kind of like, it was in the microcosm is what I do, right? It's like, I'm thankfully, you know, smart enough, hardworking enough to get the knowledge part of it, but fortuitously artistic enough to be able to like, you know, work it into, hey, Miss So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so would like it to look this way. Cause it's not always about, this is the aesthetic ideal, which I learned, right? And you sort of base things off of from here, but there's a range, right? Of preference. And so, and especially now there's a lot more sort of ethnic awareness where you're like, well, I want to change it a little bit, but I don't want to be completely just vanilla this way, right? Or everybody looks the same type of thing. And so, and that's one of those things that is like pervasive in my practice, which is like really listening to the patients and really trying to get like, where do you want to go with this so I can help take you there? Because I don't want to do just what I want to do. Like, the goal is to make you happy, not to do the surgery I want to do, right? So it's kind of like that. And that was just, that day was awesome, because it is one, like, kind of when you see it and you're like, finally,
you
I know.
Say, yeah.
And I mean, in the end, my dad was like, hooray, I did it, right?
Right.
He made me go somewhere else. But at the same time, I was like, you know what? Like, it's great because he did. He did, like, it was my unlock to be like, that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was cavalier enough to be like, okay, I'll just go do plastics.
Yeah, no, I love that.
As purely like the naivete of that statement is comical to me now because I didn't know anything about it. Like,
right.
You're so like, I want to say at that point, young and confident and driven and just like, this is where I'm going to go and I'm going to go. And like the match rates for that specialty are just like abysmal, right? And I was just like, I'm just going to go do
it.
And so you almost just don't think about it and you just go. And then in the end, like you just make it happen, you know, and as silly and simple as that sounds. I guess I'll say it's simple, not easy.
Right. I mean, cause you had to work. Yeah. So now you're in med school, you decide what you want to do. So you take the surgical path, you go through the 4 years, and then tell us where that led you, in your training.
So I went to, I went to Harvard to general surgery. Then I actually left and went to do a, plastic surgery research fellowship, which is how I got into wound research, which is, I'm sure we'll get to that at some point today.
Yep.
Then I did my plastic surgery fellowship at the University of South Florida in Tampa. At which point then I was hired on staff as an assistant professor for a couple of years. But I was still very driven to let's say come home. I grew up in South Florida and my family's down here. And like I mentioned previously, like, you know, Hispanics tend to have a big, like, family centric sort of motif. So I just wanted to get back to here. I had gone to University of Miami for undergrad. So I had a lot of friends here. Certainly, you know, it's just one of those things where I just thought it was the right fit for me. And also in a way I knew that Miami, from plastic surgery standpoint, is kind of one of those meccas where everybody expects it to be good. And I wanted it to be good. I wanted to be the best because I'm the best, not the best because I'm the only game in town. So I was like, if we're going to go, we got to go and like do it, you know? And that's also one of those, it sounds a little bit like I wanted plastics because I also know that I could show you that I was the best.
Yeah,
like I can show you in the photo. You know, the proof is in the pudding, like they say, right? This is better than this, and that's it. Like, you can't argue that. And so that's where I wanted to be. I didn't want to just be okay. Like, so mm-hmm. I was like, if we're going to go, we're going to compete with like the pros, right? So
did you open up your own practice right away, or was that something that happened? And can you take us down that path a little bit?
Yeah, no. At the beginning, I tried joining a couple people down here, but it's a little bit. We won't say names, but it was just interesting that the dynamic, people very much want the senior junior roles to be the case. Mm-hmm. But when you're splitting costs and stuff, like that's not really the case, right? Cause if we're 50-50, we're 50-50. And I started getting a lot more traction based on my results. So people would come in and start asking perhaps a little bit more, or not even if it was more, but the partner would like for me to be the person. There was just a lot of static and, you know, for me, it was kind of odd because I'm not that type of person. I'm more like an abundance mindset, like, hey, you know, there's plenty to go around. Let's just do this. Right. I thought it was a collaborative effort. And then, but they didn't really like it. And so I said, well, listen, I mean, I'm not here to compete with you. The idea was we're going to help each other. So if you don't like that, I don't need another, like, not any more friction here.
Right.
Let's go our separate ways.
Like yep.
And so it just kind of happened by default.
I thought it
would make sense because it was early, mm-hmm. right? Because early on, you're like, not exactly rolling in it. So it makes sense to like
partner
costs and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But in the end, I was like, you know what? I, my entire life, have been more than willing to put forth the effort and work at putting whatever work is necessary, you know, we'll do what is required. That's a famous quote there that you just got to do what's needed. And I've never shied away from that. One of those things is like, I'm not saying necessarily I'm like the smartest kid in the world or anything like that, but I'll outwork you if that's what it's going to take. Right. And so that's one of those things, like I've never, you know, my wife laughs. She's like, you're not supposed to live on that little sleep. I was like, yeah, but we need to get this done. So this is what's going to happen.
That's
I'll catch up later. And it's one of those things that I don't know if it's, you know, from my family, or the Harvard way, or any of that. Those things all contribute to your personality and who you become as a person. But it's one of those things that I did sort of find out about myself during the residency and during my training, that my dad had kind of instilled, you know, within me from very early on, which was like, respect the value of money. Like, mm-hmm. you can't just have everything for free, because he was a doctor, but, and it's not like we were like, you know, we just weren't like doing all the rich things. Mm-hmm. He was like, I don't want that for you, because it's going to skew you the wrong way. And he had seen it, I guess, happen. So he's like, I need you to understand the value of money. So they understand, like, this stuff doesn't just happen. Like, you have to work for whatever it mm-hmm. is that you want. And I think, in a way, I thank him for that, because I do see some folks that like have had it all since the beginning, and it's cool. I'm not saying like I wouldn't have, you know, wanted some of that cool stuff, but at the same time, and I'll quote, I'm sure you know this guy, Alex Ramosi, who had this thought of, he said, well, if you wanted to have a person that's strong and resilient and capable, what would you do to make them that way? Right. And it wouldn't be having an easy life.
No, you have to get
it would be yeah. having to go through struggles and having yeah. to face things and overcome. And that's what builds you and makes you the person you are. And I think it's very true. And I think we all kind of know that inside. And then, but when he said it, I was like, yeah,
it really is true.
The case. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, but in a nice way for me, it reframes like, now you're thankful for all those hardships and stuff you went through, because now you're the person you are because of it. And I think it does prepare you for the future, and it has given me some lessons for me to be able to instill in my daughters as well. I mean, my daughters are 4 and 6, so maybe it's a little early for that, but
it's the grit.
I have a framework of things of how to get them there, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to be kind of the same way.
Yeah.
No private jets. Right. We're a long way from that. I'm joking.
Yeah. No, but I mean, that's the thing. You have to work for it. And especially when you like, nothing in life comes easy. And when we usually learn in the hard times. You don't really learn a lot when things are flowing and going easy and life is peachy. It's kind of when things are tough and you're down is when you learn, and it sucks, especially when you raise kids. And as they get older, I mean, I have 3 teenagers, and there's times where I'm like, oh, I wish sometimes it didn't have to be hard, you know, if someone's going through something. But I always have to remind right. myself, you know what? The hard times are what builds character. The hard times are what, you know, makes someone a better person if they can get out, right? If you can teach them in it, you know, this is going to be hard right now, but if you learn the lesson in there, it's going to, you know, you're going to come on the other side. So, I mean, one of the reasons why, you know, we got to meet in person, and we can't go too much in it because it's, you know, the clinical study, but with Danielle Fetty and FedTech, that's obviously mm-hmm. the wounds, how you and Danielle, got connected. And then, you know, the things that we're doing, which is so, you know, so amazing what the Fetties are doing, and that the fact that she already had a relationship, it was like, okay, this makes sense. Let's, you know, talk to Dr. Salas about, you know, the clinical study, which we just finished up, which is, you know, which is awesome. And we're excited as that continues to, you know, go through all the processes that it has to go through. But there's, again, when you have that respect and that friendship with someone that you and, you know, Danielle had, it was kind of one of those things that it's like, this just makes sense when there's so many different avenues, so many different places, you know, that we know FetTech is going to go. And the fact that we were able to kind of all come down to South Florida, get to meet you, the relationship that you and Danny have, you know, previous, it's just kind of awesome. We got to meet Steph and got to see her work. We got to meet your wife and your kids and see the atmosphere that you have there. And that's, you know, another kind of awesome thing when you work with people and you build the relationships. I mean, relationships are really a lot of times how things go, you know, and we've talked about this on the podcast, you know, when there's young kids, when I talk about kids in their 20s listening to the podcast, and they'll ask, what advice, you know, can you give me? And that's one of the things that I like when I talk to people. It's about opportunities. It's about, you know, when people say it's not, you know, what you know, it's who you know. And sometimes mm-hmm. as much as that's unfortunate, sometimes it is, but it teaches people to, okay, I need to put myself out there. If I have a dream and a goal, I need to not just wait and see how things come. I mean, this talks about the worth right. work, and you have to, you know, you're in school, you need to work hard. You're on the sports field, you need to work hard, because, you know, cutting corners and doing things, you know, it could bite you in the ass later. And so no, it's not, you know, it's yeah. not being that person, you know, because then you could talk to someone that's like a perfectionist and is constantly doing it. You have to live life, but you also have to remain curious, remain respectful, think about what other people are going through as you're connecting, but also you don't know where, you know, your path is going to take you. So put yourself yeah. out there. If you have dreams, put yourself in situations where oh, I'm a little uncomfortable. I don't love this. I don't know what I'm doing. But if you can get that confidence because you're putting yourself out there, there's going to be things that happen. As you said, you know, yes, your dad had relationships, but if you were kind of like a shitty, sucky kid, those relationships are not going anywhere.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, yeah, that's part of the investment of your part. And to speak to what you're saying, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with just relationships that happen in life. And putting yourself out there is essential. And also, I mean, I know you mentioned it's kind of unfortunate. That's the way it is, but I don't know if necessarily it's unfortunate. It's just, it is the way, right, mm-hmm. of the world. And if you, it's not to say like, yes, some people are fortunately already placed in that scenario, but it doesn't mean that you cannot be in that scenario, right? It's just, you have to figure out how you bring value to the equation or how you can be, you know, contribute to the situation. And then that puts you in a situation to meet those people and to make those relationships. And, you know, it's, I mean, I do it all the time, just in random situations. And my wife's always like, well, you talk to everybody. Like, what's the deal? I'm like, well, because, you know, I had a question that I wanted to ask them, and they looked like they knew what they were doing, or I overheard and I thought it was interesting, so I kind of followed up on it. And I don't, you know, I'm not sure where I got that, but it is one of those, like, I guess old school isms of like, you know, it doesn't hurt you to say something nice to somebody if you have to say it. And I think that served me well. If I can give anybody a tip of how to start a conversation, just give a compliment. Like,
and mean it.
It was,
don't give an yeah, yeah,
no,
yeah.
And it was forever ago, but, totally. But it was like, I'm like, not today, obviously I'm wearing the scrubs cause I had surgery today, but, I would say I'm fairly style conscious. My wife is like, well, you were so much like putting together a suit. And I was like, yeah, but it matters because people are going to see you and you know, it reflects how you look and stuff. Tom Ford said it was a form of good manners, right? Dressing well. So, but in that sense, whenever we were in the elevator, my grandma would say, you know, you can say something nice. You don't, cause I would always ask like, why is everybody always quiet?
Yeah.
Why do we always just stare forward? And she's like, well, you can speak if you want. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And you know, here we go as a kid, right? Say, no filter. Here we go. So I was like, hey, that's, you know, why is your dog, whatever, you know what I mean? So like, mm-hmm. and it kind of stuck with me that like, there's no rule against that. Right. So, but now what I'd like to do is just compliment somebody on if something look like if they put the world put together, or they, you know, I see something cool, or they look like they're having a good time, or they look, they're just stressed. It's just like a one liner that is no skin off my back. But I can either make you feel amazing or comforted or make you feel you're not alone. And then we part ways when the door opens. But it doesn't matter. Like, why not? You know yeah. what I mean? It's like it's another human and you can help them. And off of those conversations, I have started conversations that are longer lasting.
Yeah.
Or they'll run to me later and be like, hey, how's it going? Like now all of a sudden, like we're sort of friends, you know, but it just starts that. There is no rule that you can't talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. Now I know like obviously in social norms and if somebody's an elected official and things like that, I'm not saying you like hop the fence, but
no, but you're
but like 90% of people are not that. Right?
No,
it's just a conversation. And if they're not receptive, okay. But you lose nothing by trying.
No.
Right?
And you know, it's one of the things that I've taught my kids since they were little. I mean, my kids were young in New York City, you know, we lived in New York City and I would always say to them, you know, just be aware of your surroundings. Watch what's around, you know, don't just be the person, especially nowadays, especially with kids, you know, there's a certain generation that you could tell when things changed a little bit and they, you know, their social norms are a little off. You're like,
yeah.
You know, and I think it's when electronics, and I don't love to be that person that's like, you can tell, and I'm not going to name the ages, but it's like, Jesus, they were not taught, hey, you're going to sit at the dinner table and we're going to have conversations. We're going to go out to a restaurant and we're not going to be sitting there on our electronics. We're going to have conversations as, you know, as right. families. And that was something that was always really important to my husband and I. It was like, I don't care if the kids, someone's in a bad mood. I'm not shoving an electronic in their face. We're going to work it out like normal people do. Like, hey, we're at dinner. This is how you're supposed to act when you're right. at dinner. We are at a restaurant. Sorry, you're having a bad day, you know, but let's sit down, have a meal, talk, and then you can have your bad day when you finish, you know, outside. You don't have to be peachy, but you don't need to be, you know, whatever. So right. it is one of those things I've always said to them, just be aware of what's your surroundings, because you don't know who's coming in your path. You don't know who you're going to meet. You don't know who you're supposed to meet, but you also don't know who you can impact that day. You know, we all have stuff. It doesn't matter how we grew up, whether how, you know, privileged, non-privileged, we all have trauma at some point in our life. And trauma can be big, it can be little, but when it's your own trauma, it's something. You don't know what someone's going through that day. So like, be the person that maybe like someone drops something, just pick it up, hand it, you know, be the person that is the better person. Hold the door for someone. Don't be in your phone or be like too much into yourself. Look around. And I think, you know, sometimes that is, you know, lost when you're in the city, when you're in places that are busy, you know, people are trying to get home, you know, after COVID, you know, people are struggling. It's like, if you can be the person that just brightens someone's day by just doing something small, it doesn't go unnoticed. And it also, when you act like that and do that, it just becomes then easier and easier. And you don't have to be, you know, extrovert. I have a couple kids that are extra, you know, really out there, and then others that are a little more introverted. And it doesn't, you don't have to be the big personality. Yeah. You can do it in your own way and make it your own way. But that the human connection and connections are so important for so many different reasons. I mean, and a lot that you mentioned.
100%. But like you said, I mean, the more you practice it, the more it becomes part of who you are. Then it's not really, then you're almost not really trying for it. It happens naturally, in which case is when it becomes genuine, like you had mentioned at the beginning. And it's interesting because that's a lot of like the conversations you have when you first bring somebody on board at my practice, whether it's like South Plastic Surgery or the Love Med Spa. Like all my employees go through that same, I give them all the same talk. I'm like, listen, you will have interactions with people. Not everyone is going to be super happy and bubbly because everybody has their days, right? And you have to think if that person is acting difficult or testy or whatever, maybe they're having a bad day. Why don't you, instead of being like attitude back, think, let me be the bright spot in this person's day. Let me see how I can take it almost like as a challenge, right? To say, I'm going to make this person smile. I'm going to make them have a good day. I'm going to make them, you know, turn their frown upside down, like they say. And it's almost like embrace it as part of your role, right? And like you said, if we all did that, right, the world would be so much better. If all we were trying to like one up each other and how good it can make somebody else feel, that would be awesome. Mm-hmm. And so I try to instill that in all my team members. I don't like to call them employees, but team members that come on board, because it's one of those like you got to buy into the mission of like we're here to make you happy. And what's funny is like when they start doing that at work, then they start doing it like not at work. Then, you know, and I've had a couple of them like later on in, you know, when they've been for a while, they're like, yeah, it's different. Like how you just look at stuff differently now, because you're always searching for what can be the bright spot, because I'm going to want to hit on that in case this person isn't happy.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it does, it reframes your brain. Right.
Yeah.
And gosh, I saw this in, where did I see that? I read this in a book. And I can't, I'm failing you now because I can't quote you the book, but there's a gentleman who's like very well off, and he's, you know, his kids are grown up like very responsible, very thankful, very grateful for what they have, versus like the standard sort of cliche of like spoiled trust fund kids that are like, oh, you know, they're a mess because all these other internal issues that they've developed. And they say, well, how did you do it? How is that possible? Like with the amount of affluence that you have, for them to grow up so grateful and so like aware. And I want to share this with you because I have kids and I do it now every night since I've read that. So he said, well, every night I asked them to tell me about their day, but specifically say, tell me one thing that you're thankful for. Like, because it makes them think about it. And they're like, I don't know. Like, this is this is Michaela. I don't know. I'm like, well, no, I need you to find something, because I don't, it doesn't matter if it's like I got an Oreo cookie today.
Right.
Don't let my wife hear that. But but it's as long as they're it trains your brain every day to think, to start finding the positives of the day, right? Which makes you a positive thinker, which makes you a grateful person, which then subconsciously, that's just how you are, right? Because I'm starting this at 4 and 6 or whatever. I guess it was like a year ago that I read that. But so, you know, it's like, I think it makes perfect sense. Like, it's just how you look at things. And that's one of those things where I like to attribute to my parents. My mom specifically, she's the most positive person in the world. And my grandma, and they were just like, everything's awesome. Like, people are beautiful. People are nice. You want to be part of like the beauty of this world. Like, that's literally how like you were brought up. And so you're always thinking like everything's positive. Now, you know, caveat being that the world isn't all, you know, roses and rainbows and unicorns, right? So that there are some, like you, as you mentioned earlier, challenging situations that we get into, and there are some, there are bad people and mean people and all that stuff. But if you're, if you don't let it corrupt your overall inside and make you jaded, then you can battle through that. You, your positivity can literally push through all that. And I've had it. I've, you know, not for today's episode, but I've, there's been some stuff that you're just like, man, like some people are just, you know, but okay, like, you know, you think they must be having a really
you can't take it personally.
That type of stuff.
Yeah, right.
Their life must be a mess if they're doing that or working that hard to make your life difficult. Then that's just, you know, I feel bad for them.
Exactly.
And you move on, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's so much better things to be into and look into and focus on. You know, like the Buddhists say, the problem is you think you have time. Mm-hmm. It's like, enjoy while you're here, man. Don't spend time like stressing about all the bad things and pre-worrying about whatever. It's like, enjoy your life. There's so much awesomeness around you that it's just, it's a much more worthwhile endeavor.
Yes. I'm going to leave it at that because that is a beautiful ending. But let everyone know, and I will do this in the beginning, so they're going to hear it in the beginning as well, but let everyone know where they can find you if they're like, wait, I'm in South Florida, or I would love to, you know, check out Dr. Salas when I come into Florida.
Okay. So, my name is Rafael Emmerich Salas. I'm a board certified plastic surgeon at Salas Plastic Surgery, and the Love Med Spa. And we are located in Pembroke Pines, Florida, which is, we like to call it Fort Lauderdale West. and yeah, I mean, just look us up. SPSMiami.com is the website, or, Salas Plastic Surgery Miami on, Instagram. You can check me out on, at Dr. Emmerich Salas on TikTok. I don't dance, but I do have lots of educational content. Yeah, Google my name, full name for Juliet, Rafael Emmerich Salas. For YouTube, I have YouTube educational channels, same thing. Started those to help my patients out so that they can be educated and armed with good information to live the dream and, you know, get what they want, achieve their happiness.
Wonderful.
Hopefully we can help them with that.
Well, thank you so much for joining Your Next Stop. You guys know what to do. Like, rate, review, and share. You might be listening to this episode and saying, oh, this is so cool, but you don't know who needs inspiration. You don't know who's thinking, do I want to go to medical school? Do I want to become a doctor? Do I want to become a surgeon? What is it? And then different paths. Again, the positive, thinking about different things. Someone in your life needs to hear this. So definitely go and share it. And thank you for joining another episode of Your Next Stop.
I hope you liked this episode of Your Next Stop. Please subscribe to my channel, share with your friends, and join in each week.